Latest and greatest in comics, news, and reviews, and topic discussions, and everything. This week we have a very special episode. It is an interview with Matt Hawkins of the upcoming Top Cow series, Think Tank. So, in just a moment, we're going to sit down with Matt Hawkins and talk about all sorts of things, including science, comics, and everything in between. So, if you like that stuff, you're going to like this episode. Hello, everybody. We are sitting here with Matt Hawkins of the upcoming series Think Tank from Top Cow. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, so is it Top Cow, Minotaur, Image, all sort of one and the same?
Yeah, I mean, Top Cow has always been, you know, Silvestri's company inside of Image, and I've been part of it since 1998. We created Minotaur originally about 10 years ago to do a couple projects that were sort of, I think, is Top Cow has sort of a branding that's kind of specific. You know, it's natural, art-driven, it's the artifact-type things, and a lot of these books that we do at Minotaur Press are books that I've always wanted to do, or books or projects I wanted to work with people on, like Jorge Lucas and Christos Gage on Sunset.
Yes.
Awesome book, great project, not really a Top Cow book, you know?
Yeah, and I'd say the same thing for Echoes. Echoes was one of my favorite books from last year, I think. That was a fantastic book.
Yeah, and that's not a book we would have ever published under Top Cow. Yeah. And Philip Sablik actually was the one who sort of convinced me to resurrect Minotaur a couple years ago, and we started doing it. I think it's because he wanted to do his last Mortal project, and he knew we'd never do it at Top Cow.
But
we did. You know, we've done a few, and Think Tank was just one of those books where it's not. It's. Did you read the first issue? Did you get the review copy?
I think somebody else got it, and I personally wasn't able to. But I'm going to try to track it down.
I can send you a link. You can read it, and then you can feel free to comment on it after, or put, you know, the first 6-8 pages up on you guys' site if you want.
That'd be great.
But Think Tank is sort of, it's set in the present day. It's I don't know how much you know about my background, but I have a physics degree.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask about that a little bit later.
Yeah, I have I have a science background. In a parallel universe, I was a scientist in a think tank. I wouldn't be nearly as smart as this guy, but a lot of the characteristics of this guy, I put sort of my own personality in. This guy's kind of a slacker genius. He's very emotionally immature, but super intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's got a lot of little quirky things. I kind of call it, he's a study of conflict. And even in the first issue, he's talking about how he is a study of conflict. And a lot of little things, like when I was in second grade, I was at the beginning of my second grade, I took a test and they were going to allow me to skip the second grade, but I actually crawled up onto the table during the interview. And the interviewer said, well, he passed the test. We don't think he's mature enough to skip second and go into third.
I mean, how much mature is third grade?
I don't know, dude. I look at that. My sister skipped a grade and it fucked her up for life. You know, yeah. I'm glad, honestly, I didn't skip a grade. I know everybody's getting redshirted now so they can be buffer for playing sports. And, you know, I know my sister, I can't imagine her being, I was already kind of small, kind of a late bloomer, you know, so yeah. I can't imagine being even a year. You're younger in all those grades.
Yeah, but I had some. I guess the kid was, I want to say 10, and it was in eighth grade, I think. And I just like the kid got picked on like all the time. You know, it was a horrible experience, I assume, for him. And he skipped that grade too, and then was a senior by like 15, I think.
Yeah.
And that's rough. That really, I have to assume that would be really rough.
Well, and what it did for this guy, and our guys, our lead guy's name is David Lauren, Dr. David Lauren.
Mm-hmm.
And, he was recruited sort of when he was 14 out of high school. You know, he was graduating from high school at 13, 14, and was recruited by the military. And the one thing, my dad was in the military. He was an officer in the Air Force, and I grew up and lived on military bases all over the world.
Yeah.
And so I have kind of a weird, skewed perspective on my childhood and life and things, because growing up on military bases and having to move every 2 or 3 years
mm-hmm. –
you know, your entire life until you go to college, honestly kind of fucked up, you know, and it it's weird when I realize I don't have a lot of childhood friends that I still talk to. Most of my friends, you know, I'm 42 now, so I'm old enough to where I don't give a shit. But a lot of childhood friends, I don't know who they are, you know.
Yeah.
I have two sons, and they've grown up here in Culver City and since they were born.
Yeah.
You know, and like they have the same friends since they were in, you know, preschool. And my older boy is going into seventh grade now. So it's cool. I don't know. I've had almost the opposite effect, but some unique insights. And there are a lot of stuff that my dad told me over the years on what he did and how he did things that sort of molded kind of. And I met, and after he went as in the Air Force, he went to work for Rockwell for a number of years. Huh? And a couple of things happened that sort of I thought about early on that I use this very heavily. He told me early on in the early 80s that the reason why the payload of the space shuttle was designed the way it was to carry a nuclear warhead. They had always built the space shuttle. If you look at the payload, the section in the back, it's perfectly built to house one of our ICBMs from that time period.
Yeah.
And I think the Russians knew it. I think everybody knew it, but no one ever really talked about it. It's not like something talked about, you know, in school. But, when I was a kid, we did the nuclear war drills. You know, everyone was afraid of the cold. I don't know how old you are, but, you know, It's weird when I think back on that, because my kids today aren't concerned about nuclear war.
That's great.
Maybe they should be, but you know, I mean, they're not. They're afraid of terrorists, you know, and that's something. But they're not. You know, you're right. It is a good thing, but they're not afraid of being nuked. Like I remember, I was. I used to be terrified of that as a kid.
Yeah.
But
I think the Cold War went until the wall came down. So, I definitely remember some drills. It wasn't. I don't think it was as dramatic, I think, when I was younger, but we still did those for sure.
Yeah, in the 70s, it was, you know, drop and roll, kind of like fire drill. You get underneath the drawer or the desks, but I'm sorry. I'm getting way, way off topic.
No, that's okay. We can move. I mean, like, this. I think this all might have something to do with the series, so.
Well, it does. What it is it explains a lot of backstop. The last original comic series I wrote on my own was Lady Pendragon, and that was in 98. And I've written some stuff for Top Cow. I did some Darkness stuff. But most of the stuff I was doing was sort of fill in here or there. You know, I wrote some TV stuff about 6 years ago, but I haven't written a ton of stuff in the last few years. I've created a lot of ideas where I've sat down and written out templates and then handed them off to other writers. Like Fialkov wrote The Test off of a template I wrote. And there have been about 20 of those over the last 10, 15 years. But I just, you know, it's one of those things where I finally realized, you know, why don't you put your money back where your mouth is and write, you know? So this was a project I've been wanting to do for a long time, and I don't think anyone's done something quite like this. But just the quick pitch I'm going to give people when they come up to me at the booth and say, hey, what's your book about, is that this is a book about a guy who's caught in a situation where he is a military – he works for a think tank, which is housed inside of Fort Meade, which is in the Washington corridor of the East Coast, and also where the NSA is headquartered, and is considered the most secure facility in the world. This guy is the golden boy creator, inventor, genius that's creating weapon systems and things for the military that they're using. The one thing I always tell people that they sort of perk up is like, you know, these drones you see on TV fighting in Afghanistan, these things are 20 years old. You know, I mean, the technology for a drone is decades old at this point. I mean, we have amazing things like remote control insects and things like that, and singular flying remote control bullets that you can just fly a bullet like through a vent, and it has a recognition facial system that can then target, and it has its own ignition system that will then kill someone.
Wow.
You know, that's the kind of stuff. I mean, when you there's a couple think tanks here in LA, and a good buddy of mine works at one, and he doesn't give me much information because obviously all of it's classified.
Yeah, I can assume.
A lot of the declassified stuff, and even seeing the stuff that's, you know, 15 years old, when you look at this stuff, you're like, holy shit, if this is 15 years old, what do they have now?
Yeah.
You know? And it's always one of those things. And another thing that I saw that sort of helped shape this project was there was a YouTube video that didn't last very long. It was about 4 or 5 years ago, and it was this drone that was hovering above a sand dune somewhere in Middle East, and you saw clearly whoever was piloting it had gone to the bathroom or something, and the thing was just hovering there about 10 feet off the ground, and you saw these two Arab guys basically put a ladder up and go up with these sticks and knock the thing out of the air. And that, to me, is fascinating, and I love kind of that combination of low-tech and high-tech.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sort of like that's pretty amazing that these two guys, you know, just ran up this ladder and beat this thing until it fell to the ground. Here's this multi-million, you know, billion-dollar drone.
Mm-hmm.
when the guy got back from his piss, he was having a bad, he had a bad day.
Yeah.
But, so I'm sorry. Again, I'm getting back off track. This one of the projects I love to talk about because I love this stuff because it's all real to me. I mean,
yeah.
The whole story sort of centers around this guy who he's been basically sabotaging his own efforts for the last 3 or 4 years. He's decided he's not going to make anything for these people anymore that kills people. It's not that he's against defense. It's not that he's really all that. He's just kind of disenfranchised. He's disillusioned. He's like, you know what? They lie to me about what they're using this stuff for.
Mm-hmm.
So he's just sort of tired of it. He's 28. He's been doing this for 10 years. He's never really had a relationship with a woman. He's sort of this, you know, he's become – he wasn't this way originally. He became sort of this slacker genius, you know. And people hate this guy because he's the guy that – you know, in college, he didn't even bother to go to class, but still showed up and set the curve on the final.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of person. But and what he's doing is so he's faking it. They know he's faking it, so they send in a new military attaché to basically be the liaison with the think tank, who comes in, and he's an all business, you know, no nonsense guy. His name's Colonel Harrison. He comes in and basically it says, "I'm going to kick your ass. You're going to get this shit done." And David has a cohort called Manish, who's a basically his bitch. And he's the guy that the military has put there and given this job, not because he's really capable of doing it, or he's a smart guy and he's a good guy and one of David's friends from Caltech, but he's basically there to help keep David in line and motivate him. That's mm-hmm. the only way to have him in this lab.
Yes. Yeah.
And they sort of use that relationship because David likes this guy, he mistreats him, but they have like this brother thing going on where, you know, it's okay if I mistreat him, but goddamn it, you can't.
Yeah.
So it's that kind of thing with him. So Harrison comes in and basically starts, you know, trying to whip him into shape. And so what David realizes, and this is where his core conflict of his character is at, he realizes that he loves this shit. He loves the creation process. He loves working with the brightest minds in the world. He loves having access to these billions and billions of dollars of equipment that he could not work with anywhere else. And he realizes he lives for this shit. But at the same time, he's incredibly conflicted because he knows that the stuff he's developing and building is killing people all over the world or being used to kill people all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
He's having bad dreams. He's having all these flashbacks and all these various things that he's done and been involved in his life. And in the story, about halfway through, I reveal in a flashback a pivotal point as to the exact moment when he realized, I don't want to fucking do this anymore.
Yeah.
And what it does is it's based on a real thing that I saw. And there's this thing called Metal Storm, which you can Google. And it's basically a weapon system that will shoot up to 1 million bullets a minute. And it doesn't use gunpowder. It's all chemical. So there's no jamming, no anything. And what it's used for in the guide, it says it's used for destroying incoming ordnance, meaning you put it on top of a tank, you put it on top of a boat or a ship, and then if a missile's flying at it, you basically put up a wall of bullets that will take out whatever's coming at it.
Mm.
But in the guide, the operations manual, which is actually available online, there's this little footnote that says it's also great for crowd control.
Ugh.
And I read that thing and I'm like, holy fuck. That was a weird moment for me that I'm like, that they say it's for this, but it's really for this. And I'm like, you know, and I realized these things are being used in Afghanistan right now. Because the thing is, you can basically helicopter in or drone in because these drones are big. I mean, some of these drones can carry up to 1,500 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
Carry this weapon system in, set it on top of a mountain. They don't need any soldiers there. Basically, the thing has infrared targeting. It has facial recognition software. It can seek out who it wants to seek out, and it just fucks them up. And they also have system – like that system can also be set on full motion capture, which means any motion at all, it unloads on it. And you know, it's like 13,000 or 16,000 bullets a second or whatever it is. And there's a video online that's on YouTube because it's like, – again, this is 15 years old. You know what I mean? And you go look at that. It's pretty amazing when you see it just fuck up this wall of steel.
Terrifying. That's
that's the cool shit to me though, is you know, these sci-fi movies, and there's some cool concepts in it, there's some cool stuff in these movies, but a lot of it is so junk science, you know. It's there's a thread of truth in it and it's all junk science. And the thing is, what blows my mind is the real shit out there is so much more cool. I mean, really go look at what's available and what's out there.
There's this cool factor, in the same time completely terrifying. And I think that's probably something that you're going to touch on with this. Like,
Well, I wrote the first graphic novel kind of as an entry level thing. I mean, I have a second graphic novel already in my head.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, what he decides to do in the first graphic novel is he decides to get the fuck out.
Yeah.
And how do you do that? You know, because he realizes there are no retired think tank scientists. Name one sort of weapons scientist for the military that retired and moved to an island.
Couldn't come up with one.
You know, and the reason why is because guys like Oppenheimer and these guys, they lived until they worked until they died. Yeah. The military, you know when you know that kind of thing and you have that level of clearance, you don't get to retire. They have, and the interesting thing is the military actually has some retirement community centers on military bases. Mm-hmm. So guys like this, guess what? They get sent to the old folks home on the base. They never leave. So it's pretty amazing stuff. And so where I sort of get the reader in about halfway through, he says, I'm getting the fuck out of here. So he basically he reveals that about 3 years ago when he decided he didn't want to do this anymore, he started figuring out how he was going to get out and how he was going to. And so he's had three – here's this genius level guy who spent 3 years figuring this out. And, of course, it doesn't go exactly his way.
Yeah.
And there's just – I don't want to give away too much of the story, but it's one of those things that there's like 27 – I actually sat down and figured out there are 27 different things that he does in order. And the one thing he realizes, and it's said very early in the second issue, is that the one thing you can count on the military for is to follow protocol. You can use that against them.
Yeah.
So I don't want to give away. I was pitching you the whole story, which is probably not the best idea because I want people to read.
Yes. So let's pause on that. You said here that this series is being released as a miniseries. One of the things that was interesting is that you referred to it as a graphic novel. Now, is that how you're writing it? As like all at once, get this together.
Yeah, I wrote the whole thing at one time. Yeah, but I tried to write each of them. Look, I'm not dumb. I looked at what Robert was doing with Walking Dead, and I said, how does this guy end his issues? How does he write his graphic novels? Mm-hmm. I sort of deconstructed that and said, all right, this is how he does it. I'm going to do it that way, too.
Yeah.
And not in terms of I'm ripping off his style, but just structurally how he set it up. He leaves each issue at a cliffhanger, something interesting, because you need people to come back, you know? The first issue at the end, which I'll send you, as soon as we're done right here, I'll send you the You Send It link, and you can download and read it. Great. But the, I tried to make each issue a cliffhanger. The third to the fourth issue is less of a cliffhanger, but that was just more utilitarian. But the first two issues have cliffhanger endings. And then, and Rasan Ekdahl, who's my artist on this and my co-creator, is doing just amazing work. I gotta tell you, I really like that. You talked about Echoes. He's actually taking it up a notch here and, just has such expressive faces and such expressive things. The one thing I really love about that guy and why I wanted to work with him was most artists can make a machine gun fight look cool. You know, I mean, even mediocre artists can make a super action scene look cool for the most part. There are a handful of guys that can make, two guys sitting at a table talking to each other look interesting. You know, mm-hmm. That was one of the things that I always thought that separated Frank Miller from guys back in the 80s was if you look at Frank's work and some of that early stuff, he was one of the few guys that had his quiet scenes were actually interesting to look at.
Absolutely.
Same thing with Quentin Tarantino movies. I love those things because they're mm-hmm. so crazy, but even the fucking quiet scenes are interesting to me.
Yeah, I feel the exact same way. That's, a lot of the criticism for Quentin Tarantino is dialogue heavy, but that's some of my favorite parts. So those instances and things like Echoes where it's very dramatic and not so much action-oriented, clearly. But I think I think that suits it. I think that that kind of art style is going to suit Think Tank as well. Because the way you're pitching it, it sounds like a very, very smart book. It sounds like there will be some action, but that really the way it's sounding is it sounds highbrow to at least a certain degree, which is great. And I think that that's a fantastic thing. And I think that there's not enough of that. I think that the topic is interesting. At the very least interesting, but so it seems like his art style with this is something that's going to make this comic extremely fantastic. So I am looking forward to it for a variety of reasons. But that's good.
By the way, just to tell you, the action itself comes from the technology, and that's where this really is the ultimate in what I call brains versus bronze storyline.
Awesome,
but it really is a very. There's a lot of action for a book where no one really, the lead character never really uses his fists.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a lot of action to it.
I can't wait to read it. Honestly. Now there also sounds like there's so much wealth of story here. And so when you said that you've already started thinking about the second graphic novel, is this going to be like a multiple, volume series as opposed to, just, let's do this miniseries, see how it does, go into this next one if it's there. I mean, it sounds like you've got a real plan for a very distinct, almost not universe, because I'm not going to suggest that it's that big. But it does sound like there's a lot here, and it sounds like I wouldn't want to stop reading this after just two volumes. Basically,
I have sketched out on a, you know, I still, when I write, I sketch out initially in a yellow notepad. I don't know how many people still do that, but I'll go to the park and sit down and start sketching out ideas and drawing, you know, writing basically notes to myself. But I have at least 7 or 8 arcs of this that I could
write,
which would put it into the 50s. You know, and I'm sure, and see, here's the thing. Every time I write more, I'm like, oh, what about this? I could do this. I mean, there are over 200 companies out there that exclusively provide equipment for the U.S. military, and that's all they do.
Yeah.
And they're supposed to be, you know, autonomous, and they're supposed to be this division between the U.S., the company and the military. But if your only customer is the U.S. military, and that's your only customer, is there really any division? They're working for the fucking military.
Yeah.
You know, and that's one of the other things I sort of try to put across in this. But I just sent you the Usenet link, by the way. It should be in your inbox.
Well, let me pause there just before you go too far into giving me more story details. Is what you're seeing with the future of the series, the theoretical future of the series, is it going to start, like, center around the same doctor that we were seeing in the first? Or is this a, you know, where it could very well be a different set and just have the same sort of concept?
You know, that's a very interesting question that I honestly had not thought about. My intent initially was to stick with the same character. Mm-hmm. And that's where I started doing all these various arcs. I just love conflicted characters.
Yeah, absolutely.
And even the bad guys in the series are, I hate one-dimensional bad guys. Yeah. And like my main military attaché guy is just a patriot. He's a good guy.
Yeah.
He's just doing his job. He's there to kick his ass and do his job.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there is one sort of a little slightly more evil behind the scenes character, but that one sort of gets revealed at the end of the first graphic novel. So I don't want to give too much of it away.
Yeah.
But, you know, here's the thing. Yes, you're talking about a real world application of a lot of this material, and assuming I don't get hauled off and thrown in some NS, you know, because the thing is, a lot of the stuff I've done where it's more of the modern tech, I've guessed at it. You know, I mean, I have a science background. I certainly have done a lot of research online. I'm a reasonably smart dude. So I've sort of said, you know what? They did this. This is the direction they were going. This is where they could be in 10 years. Now, they could be not even close to that far or infinitely farther. You know, I don't really know. So where my guesstimates on where they're at in the current is completely that. It's just a guess. But I love when Tom Clancy got investigated by the Navy. When he wrote, what was it? It wasn't the submarine one he did. Which one was that?
Red October.
Yeah. He got investigated by the Navy because he described the inside of a submarine almost to the T. And he did it because he just thought that's the way it should be.
Yeah.
And I love that interview. I thought that was just so great. So, I don't know. I aspire to be investigated by the NSA.
Well, I hope your dream comes true in that. The other part of this is that if I'm not mistaken, you're now president of Top Cow?
Yeah, I've been president of Top Cow since 1999.
Yeah. How are you approaching this division of labor for yourself? I mean, it's like you've got this whole wealth of story that you could, you know, go infinitely upon. And it really seems like this is going to be a passion project that you're going to want to do, possibly. It sounds like your heart and mind are both into this story, which is another one of the reasons why I'm really excited about this. But how is that, like, dealing with your, I don't want to say corporate duties, because I don't want to say that Top Cow is super corporate. But, you know, you do have a great deal of responsibility there as well.
Yeah.
So, like, are you finding it difficult? Or are you finding it natural because this is something that you really want to tell and it's just kind of coming out? Or, you know, like, is anything getting in the way there? Like, what? Like, I'm.
It's a constant. You know, I have two sons, and you know,
there's that clearly.
I've got an insane personal life on top of an insane professional life.
Mm-hmm.
I'm managing all the film and TV adaptation stuff for Top Cow and dealing with sort of the day to day, and I deal with all the financial for the company and all the legal. So yes, it is. It comes down to time management, and you know, it's one of those things where I come in the morning and I try now, I'm trying to divide it up to where I'll write from like 9 to noon. I try to write for 3 hours a day. And then in the afternoon, I do my business stuff. And it doesn't always work out that way. I end up doing a lot of my writing on the weekends and in the evenings, you know, and that's okay. I mean, here's the thing. I have the luxury of being able to actually write what I want to write. I'm not trying to write because I need the money. I'm not actually taking a paycheck to write this, which is great because I have less stress on whether or not this book can break even because I just have to pay my artist.
Yeah.
You know, and so this isn't, you know, like, just like this is your, you know, your second job. This is for fun. I mean, I'm doing Think Tank. It's a tremendous amount of work, but it's a passion project for me. And I, you know, hope that it catches on. And my thing is I can do several volumes of this easily. And, you know, my break even point is like, I think 2,800 copies. And I know I'm going to sell at least that. So, and then I'm going to sell some trades. I'll sell some digital. So I'll make some money on this. And we do very well. The one thing that Top Cow has that a lot of the other independent companies doesn't have is we have insane international distribution. And it's because it was set up so early. You know, we were set up back in 92, 93.
Yeah.
And so we've been entrenched in Panini and in Simic and in all these international companies and have been with these long-term relationships where a lot of other companies have been unable to crack in.
Yeah.
So point is, it's all about time management. Here's the thing. I drop the ball on stuff all the time. I firmly believe in the 80-20 rule. You know, 20% of what you do makes you 80% of your money. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that I don't drop the ball on those 20%, and then some stuff just falls in the cracks.
I hear you. That sounds very intelligent and a great way to go about that. Please don't. I'm really into this idea for Think Tank, and I don't want to see that dropped. So please don't drop that.
I will do at least here. I can guarantee you that I will do at least the first two volumes.
Okay, great.
That I can guarantee you because I've written the first one and the second one. I can't get out of my head.
Yeah.
I think Rasan has to go do. He's doing a 4-issue thing, and then hopefully he'll come back and do the second volume with me. Otherwise, I'll look for another artist.
Yeah.
But I just once you read the book and you download it, take a look. I mean, he's so perfect for this.
Yeah.
Because he draws great tech, he draws great characters, and I mean, you go with another artist. I mean, there are some artists I really, really like, but they would not do this well.
Yeah, I hear you. It just sounds like I love a bunch of artists too, and it just seems that just by the way you're describing it, it sounds like his art style is going to be perfect for this.
Yeah. So,
good deal.
So this is, like I said, this is the reason why am I coming back to writing comic books right now? Honestly, I don't know. I mean, my boys are a little older now, so it makes it a little easier. I got divorced 3 years ago, so I only have them half the time, which also actually, believe it or not, gives me more time. Mm-hmm. So I have my kids every other week, and when I don't have them, I'm free to do whatever I want in the evenings. And so when I do have them, you know, my boys are the older one's almost 12, the younger one just turned 10. So they're kind of self-sufficient. I don't know if you have any kids, but when they're 4 or 5, you can't do shit, you know? They're 100% of your time. So now that they're a little older, I'm able to get in and do a little bit more of what I want to do, you know?
The other thing that I wanted to ask is how long is this, the idea of Think Tank, been sitting with you? Is this something that you kind of just like, hey, I want to write again, and then this kind of just came? Or is this something that you've wanted to do for, you know, 10 years?
I've always wanted to do something with modern science, but the actual idea of Think Tank and how it all came together has all been in the last year.
Oh, cool.
You know, I mean, that's part of it is I went back and reapplied and got into Caltech, and I was supposed to start again in September to go back because I wanted to go back and get my doctorate. But I just realized between, you know, when Philip left and all these sort of things going on, all the time constraints, the stuff I'm going to have to pick up, I'm going to have to hire some new people and train them over the course of the next 6 months.
Yeah.
I mean, I pushed back, I deferred it back. So I've been wanting to get back into the sciences of it because I just, here's the thing. My kids, I have two sons, they're smart kids. They hate science. They think, the key things to me is they said that science is boring. And I looked at it, what? You know, and I'm like, so part of me is I'm writing this book for them. Yeah. I want my kids and other people's kids and people to think that science is cool because it is fucking cool, you know? Yes. It's boring because of these idiot teachers and the way they do it. I remember, you know, I had a fifth grade teacher who was doing the volcanoes and who was doing all kinds of crazy shit in the classroom. And it's from that point, I was sold on science, you know?
Yeah. I hear you. Oh, that's awesome, man. Like I said, I'm really looking forward to this book. I think that, you know, based on your experience with just the topic, that it's going to have a lot of, you know, I hesitate to say completely 100% accurate, but it does sound real world for sure. I'm really excited about it. I think the idea is fantastic. I like that there's more science-oriented comics coming out, like with Manhattan Projects also, and, you know, a lot of what Hickman's doing, I think that that's a really great, it's a great sort of subgenre now, because I mean, like, you haven't seen some like stuff like this for, in as far as this, as this high profile for a while. So I'm really excited to see this kind of stuff come back. That's all I can say is I'm really excited.
Well, I hope, like I said, you got the first issue now.
Yes. And when is the first issue coming out?
I believe it's coming out the first week of August.
Okay, great. And then, is it going to be monthly?
Yeah, it should be the first week of each month, August through what, November? Because Rasan's almost done with the third issue.
Awesome.
I've already written the fourth, so he's, you know, I mean, he's fairly fast. So we should be done with all four issues probably by the end of July. Actually, the fourth issue will probably be done before the first one comes out.
Awesome.
And if that's, you're really cool. We'll have a few sneak preview copies I can get you on.
Okay, about great.
Hard copy if you're going to be down there.
I'm actually not, but we might have somebody else down there that can pick it up. Again, thank you so much for coming on. I know that you're a busy guy. Good luck on the series. I think it's gonna, you know, as long as people know about it, I think it'll do great. And I'm really excited to read it myself.
Cool. Well, let me know, man. I appreciate you taking time to do this on a Saturday.
Oh, no problem. And thank you for sitting down and doing this on a Saturday.
All right, man. Take care.
You too.
Bye.
And once again, that was Matt Hawkins. And we want to thank Matt very much for coming on and talking to us about Think Tank and all the other great stuff that he's working on with Top Cow. If you want to follow Matt on Twitter, you can go to twitter.com/TopCowMatt or friend him on Facebook at facebook.com/SelfLoathingNarcissist. So again, thanks, Matt. And I want to take this time right now to tell you a little bit about our sponsors, DiscountComicBookService.com, or actually DCBService.com. which is Discount Comic Book Service, and InStockTrades.com. InStockTrades has loads of great deals over there. You can get trade paperbacks and hardcovers for great discounts. And if you spend over $50, you get free shipping. Then, after you pick up all the trades that you want to check out, maybe like Echoes from Top Cow, which is a fantastic book, you can go back over to DCBService.com and go ahead and order your copy of Think Tank number 1 and number 2 and number 3 and forever long it goes. And you can get that for probably, God, like 30% off. But yeah, so go over to DCBService.com, get Think Tank, and then go over to InStockTrades.com and pick up Echoes. They're both going to be really fantastic books. So yeah, check those out. And once again, guys, if you want to get in contact with us, you can email us at comicsofdoom@gmail.com or follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/comicsofdoom. And then go over to the lovely website geeksofdoom.com and see all of the latest and greatest in comics news and reviews and everything else. And on behalf of Geeks of Doom, this is Hunter Camp. Your comics.